fuck you! Australia! Germany!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are for another broadcast of America under siege, Trump-merica, the nightmare begins. Only it's not really the nightmare. It's more like, when you're laying there having a hard time getting to sleep, because every time you start to doze off, you jump, and then you close your eyes and you start thinking of everything. That's what. That's what. People are badly stressed out, and for good reason. People are justifiably nervous. People are scared because we are witnessing what will probably be the last days of the American experiment. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go about this time every evening if you'd like to be part of the real-time multimedia madcap zany. Real time, yeah, I got the, yep, the extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in where you will be greeted by Anatole, Jugapunch, Jules, Steve from Georgistan, VT Blom, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, who is feeling somewhat better, I trust, seems to have folded space to become Man Cave. Yep. This is, by the way, a listener-supported broadcast operation. We have no ads. We have no buy gold nows or get your Trump flag here advertisements. No. All we have is your goodwill and your determination that this broadcast continue, and we try to raise a minimum of $200 every night. Now, I'm gonna be candid about something. I don't know what's going to happen after the inauguration and Congress sits. I mean, granted, they're going to spend some time trying to put Hillary in prison. Or so they say. And, you know, good luck. Their own Benghazi committee said there was no crime there. There is no crime related to the emails. There's no crime. And for the little people who the political newborns who believed all that right-wing shit. No, really, there's no there there. But they'll spend some time doing that. But then they'll get down to business. And one of the things on the way top of the list early on is repealing the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which means that, among other things, I'll lose my health care. And so if there's any single threat to the to this program going forward, that's probably it. But it's something I can't, you know, it would be speculative to talk about it now. Thank you, Harold. Thank you very kindly, Harold, letting me know clear stream on the internet. Much obliged. Everything works for the moment. And this is what we have. And I'm doing all I can to invite people to this conversation, people we've never met, people we've never heard from. But I'm inviting them to this conversation because it's a conversation we have to have. And frankly, no, there's nowhere else that offers as many people as much of an opportunity to have their voices heard. And, you know, among people of goodwill, progressives, liberals, Democrats, remember, there are no Trump pansies allowed here. The Post, remember, henceforward, using the term Post, and we'll all get used to it. Thanks, Stockton Larry. Post stands for piece of shit Trump. So, henceforward, when you hear me use the word Post, that's who I'm referring to. I wouldn't allow Post on this program if he called. Kellyanne Conway or any goddamn Trump voter. This is and will remain, for as long as it is on the air, a safe space for good faith conversation. And I am most in earnest about that. But we have to fund it in order for it to remain. And we try to raise $200 every evening. And we need new subscribers. And so, consequently, I want to say thank you to a new subscriber. This happened earlier today. Thank you to Jay in Kalamazoo. Thank you, Jay. Thank you very kindly for subscribing. And hey, guess what? You just got your subscription. $5 added to it, courtesy of Tracy, the lady cab driver. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So thank you, Jay. And big thanks go out as well to our other subscribers, because they are the subscribers fill in the gaps a lot of the times. You know, along the way, we got to somewhere. The goal is to have 400 $10 a month subscribers. We don't even have 100 yet, but we want 400. Thank you, Jay Cruzen. Jay Cruzen's a subscriber. Thank you, Don. Thank you very kindly. Thank you, Randy, over in Ohio. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Judy, in Rochester. Thank you, Elizabeth, in New York. Thank you, Jim, in Louisiana, Stan. And thank you, Snork. Thank you, one and all. That makes fundraising a little bit simpler, so that when things go sideways, gaps can get filled in. Thank you very kindly to Joyce in Washington. Thank you very, very much for matching David in Vermont's challenge last night. All you got to do is go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on contribute. If you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, click on that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation of whatever amount you choose. Come on, hey, George Soros, click the box, baby. I mean, you spent all your money on Hillary Clinton and everything, and, well, I mean, you didn't spend all your money, but you spent a boatload of money on Hillary Clinton. Click that little box and just put $1,000 in a month, you know? Or, hey, pick up the slack for everybody that's been carrying progressive media on their backs, and George Soros, write $4,000 in the box, buddy. Because that last bet, well, the croupier just reached over and took it all away, didn't he? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, if you'd like to be part of helping keep this on the air, fill out the fields. You don't have to fill one out about what you do and when you do it or where you do it or who you do it for or why. But just get to the next screen, and at the next screen you can make your choice about PayPal or whether you want to use a credit card, that kind of thing. It's all there. It's easy. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, then there is always the U.S. Postal Service. You can send checks and money orders made payable to the Horn, not Bob Kincaid, the Horn. This is the stuff that Boss Man Wayne takes care of. You can send it there. And the mailing address is the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. If you'd care to send me an email in advance and let me know that it's on the way, I can tell Boss Man Wayne, and he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the big red truck, and he won't have to take anything with him but a good 36-ounce Louisville Slugger ball bat, because I'll bet that mailbox there for the Klan is getting a lot of visits right now, because see, they're on the ascendant, man. Oh man. It has not been this good to be a member of the Klan since probably 1875. They are so on the march. And among other things, it turned out that picture of the Klan marching on a bridge in North Carolina was not real. It was an old picture. It was real. It was just an old picture. But when Snopes.com reached out to the Klan for comment on that, the Klan actually wrote back and said, "Oh hell yeah!" On December 3rd, they're going to honor the electoral victory of Post with a rally. Mm-hmm. They went on to say, "Our goal is to help restore America to a white Christian nation founded on God's word." Yeah. "We are not evil, hateful people, as our enemies would have you believe. We are common white people from all walks of life who have recognized the problems that our race is facing." Well, Colonel Julius T. Crackerjack, there's only a few problems with what you say there. One, there ain't no such thing as race. That was something invented by white Europeans now, several years ago, a century or two or three, or maybe half a millennium, back when y'all wanted to own other people after white folks had got froggy and started moving around outside of Europe. Mm-hmm, yes. But they went on over at the KKK website. And their website says, "Most of our youth are on," all caps, "drugs," all caps off, "or pregnant with a mongrel child." If our forefathers could see America today, they would have our government leaders put to, all caps, death, caps lock off, for treason against the American people. They are rolling in their graves as you read this now. We as a people can change this course in which America has been tooken. That was the funniest part for me. Because, see, if the framers could see us now, they'd say, well, my goodness gracious. Especially the line about the mongrel child. Don't you love a pro-white, right-wing, pro-life group that refers to any child as a mongrel? Hey, Trumpansie voter, you know, you out there, the normal one. You know, yeah. I mean, you were just innocently listening to Hannity and Flush and all those fuckers. And you know, you're not a member of the Klan. You're not a goose-stepping old Nazi. You're just a good, God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual who wants to protect your rights. Guess what? You're in bed with him. Wear the fucking sheet. And I got no kumbaya in me whatsoever for any of these assholes. You voted for Trump? I got a problem with you. Because that means you, Mr. and Mrs. 48% of America, are deeply morally compromised. Even if you're not a Klansman, you got in bed with the Klan. There's an apt metaphor. You got under the sheets with the Klan. And those forefathers who'd be who would have our government leaders put to death. You know, because of the mongrel childs. Well, there's only one problem. They might not be able to find the time, or maybe they'd not be able to find the conscience, because, see, they were those white men were quite oftentimes banging away on the help, too. I mean, you want to talk about a mongrel child? How about Sally Hemings' kid? You know, the one who was the child, or two, or three, who were the children of the father of our Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson, who routinely had his slaves beaten, who chased them down when they tried to run away from his tender mercies. But they're feeling real froggy, the Klan and the Nazis. And it gets a little confusing after a while, trying to sort out the decent Trumpansies from, you know, the bad ones. I mean, we just had to have a change in America. We couldn't stand. We had had 8 long years of suffering under that one in our White House, and we couldn't take 4 more years of that Hillary woman. Oh, mercy, no. Goodness gracious sakes alive, me oh my oh. They couldn't stand that in Ohio. And I don't know, maybe there's some minimum age requirements for joining the Klan. But again, the problem lies in sorting them out. And the Trumpansies, well, they're making it even more problematic. Used to be this was kind of reliably geographical. I mean, you had your Talibandianas and folks under the hood there and whatnot. But, it was Minnesota. It was Minnesota where young man walked into his high school restroom to find nigger scrawled all over it and Trump train. And inside one of the stalls on the toilet paper dispenser, it is scrawled in what appeared to be white Sharpie or some such, or maybe white out, you know, liquid paper. Go back to Africa, make America great again. Yeah. But it's kind of all over the country. It's in Texas, it's in Louisiana, Stan. I have a dear friend who is a professor at a university in Louisiana, Stan. Women there, students, reporting that young Trumpansy males are grabbing them, laughing. Yeah. Then at San Jose University in California, within 10 hours of Donald of Post's victory speech, a Muslim student was jumped from behind in a parking garage at San Jose State University. A man tried to rip her headgear off her head and choked her in the process. San Diego State University, a Muslim student was followed by two men going on and on about Trump and the Muslims before they robbed her. They confronted her, they stole her purse and car keys, and then fled. And then when she was off searching for help, they stole her car. Mm-hmm. Corey Saylor keeps up with anti-Islamic, anti-Muslim attacks for the Council Against Islamic America, Council on American Islamic Relations. Corey Saylor said, unfortunately, the election of Trump will embolden people who don't like minorities, and not just Muslims, but minorities across the board. Yep, by the way, Jews, you're on the list too. Mm-hmm. With the hashtag TrumpPutin2016 on Twitter, a usage of the hateful Pepe the Frog meme standing in front of an oven door. They came after Peter Beinart. Kike. At Peter Beinart. You cut your own dick off and wonder why you hate yourselves? You scum worship material wealth. At Peter Beinart. Get out of our country, parasite. Some Zyklon B would help complete it. Dirty Vox Kike Ezra Klein says democracy has failed because people didn't do the will of the Jews. Wow, so patriotic Jewish hedge fund oligarch explains why he's voting for Hillary. Radical Jew attacks new Nazi Trump ad. David Ehrlich said, I was just tweeted by an ethno-nationalist whose banner is of Jews being marched into ovens. This might be his country now. an image of a person, a white person, in Nazi Feldgrau with the red armband drinking from a large jug labeled Jew Tears. Oh, it just goes on and on and on. Oh, that's by no means the end of it. The administrator, in a high school in New Jersey, had to set up hall monitors because the little Trumpansy students are chanting 10 feet higher, 10 feet higher at Latino students in the hall. They're talking about wanting the wall to be 10 feet higher. At the University of Oregon, a sophomore there went to a black student union meeting on campus. Three people wearing blackface were there to meet her. Go home, nigger, was written on the an off-campus apartment near the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse. And just a little brief interlude here for only a moment. I don't like that word. I don't like the other ones either. I don't like using them. But I reiterate at this point the need, when these words are actually used by the Trumpansies, you know, those poor, economically afflicted whites who were just angry at everything. Right. When they use these words, I'm going to use these words, because that's journalism. Or it's at least journalistically honest. I doubt that up there in the rarefied atmosphere of the editorial board of the New York Times that they're having this discussion. But I would suggest that they do. When these goddamn Trumpansies start hollering nigger all over creation, use their own words in your publication. Don't sanitize it. Don't N-dash-dash-dash-dash-R it. No N star 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 R. By God, the word is what it is, and it's a word that no decent human being should use, but the goddamn Trumpansies are using it, and they must be presented with their own hatred. Fuck 'em. Sorry. Not sorry. Because if we run around pretending that they're not doing this, or we whitewash it by putting asterisks between N and R, or between K and E, or between S and C, then that just helps normalize it. See, we can use these words, and the newspapers won't even print them, so we'll get away with it. N star 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 R. That ain't what I said. NYU, the door to the Muslim students' prayer room, has had Trump scrawled across it. A high school in Central Florida. Y'all black people better start packing. KKK for life, go Trump. A woman asked to go to the back of the bus. Yeah. Bucks County, Pennsylvania. The high school in Newtown is having all kinds of issues. Swastikas in the bathroom, hate messages against the LGBTQ students. A Mexican student found a note in her backpack telling her to go back to Mexico. Yeah. They had to call a special assembly for a high school in Lehigh Valley, PA, to tell the little white children to stop with their shit. Trump supporters in Woodland, California, speaking to Latinos. Have you started packing? Go back to Mexico. Yeah, keep on packing. This is in class in front of a teacher. The teacher said, well, pack up your stuff and get ready for the next class. And the little Trumpansies say, yeah, keep on packing. We're more American than all of you. Yeah, because you're fucking Cherokee, right, Whitey? Southern Illinois University at Carbondale, so named because it is it's a sacrifice zone, tormented for the coal that's under its ground. Students there celebrating the election of post-election. Ha! Photographing themselves in blackface, posing in front of a Confederate flag. South Philly this morning, a woman goes out to her vehicle to find it having been spray-painted with Trump rules and black bitch. Let's see. A white postal worker filling up his United States Postal Service truck at a gas station in Massachusetts yelled at Yarden Katz, who's a fellow in the Department of Systems Biology at Harvard Medical School, go back to your country. Go back to your country. This is Trump land. You ain't getting your check no more. Mm-hmm. This is just, you know, a few hours even. Temple University, a young African-American student walking along the sidewalk yelled at her, are you frustrated? Are you sad by what's happened the last few days? Smile, bitch. We voted for Trump. Let's see. Where else? Elon University in North Carolina. On the whiteboard. Bye-bye, Latinos. Hasta la vista. Or, hey, how about this? Texas State University. Isn't this the place where they, why was Texas? I talked about this, a month or so ago? Texas State University. I can't remember. Somebody help. They're producing vigilante flyers. Their faces aren't even covered up. It's a picture of a bunch of gun-toting white boys at Texas State University. The text reads, now that our man Trump is elected and Republicans own both the Senate and the House, time to organize tar and feather vigilante squads and go arrest and torture those deviant university leaders spouting off all this diversity garbage. I don't know why they capitalized the D and the G in diversity garbage, but, you know, they did. And the flyers are all around campus. Around 6 p.m. Wednesday, University President Denise Trouth had shared a letter with students about the election, encouraging students to seek to understand the divisions in the country. Kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya. Kumbaya, my lord, kumbaya. Expel the little white fucks. Oh no, wait a minute, I'm sorry. We've got that twisted, bizarre understanding of the First Amendment and their call to tar and feather university leaders. Well, that's political speech, and that's protected under the Constitution, at least until they shred the fuck out of it. Let's see. How about South Philly, where the swastikas are beginning to bloom, or Utah, where they're coming up to, where a man looked at a boy who lived in his neighborhood and said, "Get out of here, nigger!" And then went after the boy's daddy with a stun cane. Pennsylvania, they're marching with post signs and chanting white power. A middle school with little children in it in Michigan, where the little children are chanting "build that wall" at their Latino classmates. "Fuck niggers" written on a door in Minnesota. A white kid telling a young black high school student, "Nigger, you need to be picking cotton." And see, the precious little economically oppressed, economically insecure white folks who aren't like this, well, I'm sure they would say, "Well, I didn't have nothing to do with that." Or they'd say it with their Ohio accent or their Wisconsin accent. Or their Michigan accent. I do Southern. I mean, I'm a Southerner. But see, the thing is, they did have something to do with it because they elected that miserable, orange, steaming pile of shit. They just did. And they own it. And I have no intention of pretending that they don't. And I have no intention of playing kumbaya with these miserable fucks either. They own this. I ain't got nothing in it. No part of it. They got him a house. They got him a Senate. They got him a president. They got him a Supreme Court. And they are about to fuck everything sideways. And then those poor little economically stressed, blue-collar white people in middle America. Well, I'm going to look at them and, hey, how about that? You fucked yourself. Imagine that, Cletus. How about that, Emery and Eileen? You kind of enjoyed that Social Security check, didn't you? What? It's gone? It was lost in one roll of the dice when they privatized Social Security and stuck you into the tender mercies of fucking Wall Street. Really, it's gone. You're destitute in your golden years. God damn, that sucks for you. Maybe you shouldn't have voted for fucking Trump. I know, it sounds terribly mean, doesn't it? Sorry, I'm a flawed person. And I'm not feeling particularly good about this. You know, back before the election, there was the Arkansas Republican who stood in the door of a polling place and screamed, "Shut up and go home," at early voters. Yeah, there were a jillion of these stories. Didn't get to them all. The Chinese have who famously kind of stay out of our politics. I mean, we talk about theirs all the time because, you know, we got the moral fucking high ground. But they kind of stay out of our internal business, and but they couldn't help themselves. One high-ranking Chinese official said in regard to Post, "Wise men don't sneer at climate change." Sorry, Carol. No, it's not you. Carol, no. Gee, and I thought I was the reason we can't have nice things. Oh, no, they're all over the place. And by the way, the Hilarians aren't particularly nice either. They don't like having it pointed out that they went all in on a terrible candidate. Hell, I voted for that candidate. But really, I want some props for getting this right. And I want them deep. I want deep props because I got it right in 2008, too. Because, I loved him, and one of the few points of disagreement between Bart Kopp and me was that I said Hillary Clinton will never be elected president of the United States because this country has been taught to hate her. And I said at the time they will bring the right wing will bring the full force of its filth machine on board, and she will never, ever, ever be president. So she ran in 2008 and got her ass handed to her by a black guy. Now, how bad a candidate, and I mean no disrespect by this, I say this warmly. How bad a candidate do you have to be as a privileged white woman to have a black guy beat your ass in the primaries? Yeah. And this is of a piece with something else. Let me run some names past you. Evan Bayh. Ted Strickland, Patrick Murphy, and yes, regrettably, Russ Feingold, Hillary Rodham Clinton. What do all those names have in common? They were all worn out, old, blue dog, middle of the road, go along to get along, Democratic retreads that got run for office. Strickland in Ohio got his ass handed to him. Bayh in Taliban, Indiana got his ass handed to him. Murphy in Florida got his ass handed to him. Unthinkably, Feingold in Wisconsin got his ass handed to him. And then finally, the ultimate Democratic Party retread, Hillary Clinton got her ass handed to her. You know, some of this stuff has to take place. This is a conversation we have to have because we have to figure out, at least those of us who are not going to run off and go, "No, next time I'm really going to get a unicorn, god damn it." those of us who are going to stay in the Democratic Party because we don't have enough time left in our lives, to wit, we don't have thousand-year lifespans in which to build the Greens. Well, that's not a third party. That's a fourth party. I don't want anything to do with goddamn libertarians.
I just want to smoke some dope and be conservative, dude.
There's a conversation that has to be had about what happens in the Democratic Party. I mean, here's a funny for you. In 2020, Robbie Mook, what a name. I mean, the goddess of irony. We had no idea that she had put in triple time, putting him into the discussion. Robbie Mook in 2020 will be hired by some Democratic presidential hopeful to run his or her campaign. And he'll make a goddamn fortune, Robbie Mook will. Robbie Mook made a fortune off of Hillary Clinton. Got paid to lose, just like the Washington Generals. When, in fact, Robbie Mook should never be allowed to do anything more complicated inside a political campaign than maybe clean toilets. That was a terrible campaign, wasn't it? I mean, it was awful. Who comes up with Stronger Together? That's a slogan? I'm with her, and capitalizes the H and makes the arrow point to the fucking right? Was anybody paying attention to messaging and imaging in that campaign? No, I mean, all she has to do is run and she'll be president. America loves her. Nah, America didn't. But they didn't want to hear that. They were going to run the retread. They were going to run the retread till the tread fell off and got left somewhere in the middle of the interstate. Oh, I don't know. Long about Kingdom City, Missouri. Oh, the geniuses. So many of them. So, I mean, and somewhere along the way, we're going to have to start doing other actual news. But I have a feeling that just keeping up with the manifestations of disgusting, I mean, see, here's what happened. Here's how it works. 8 years of Barack Obama emboldened the right wing to fall back in love with that word. And now that it's been normalized, it's going to become a part of everyday speech. Keep an ear cocked for boy while you're at it. This is our America. This is our mess. Okay, Asa says they should have had a better campaign slogan like, Hillary will fix it! Or how about we had a better candidate? I got to thinking earlier today, I thought back to October 2015, which seems such a long time ago. And that first Democratic debate, you know, the one that Jim Webb and Martin O'Malley showed up to, too. And I thought about when Hillary's composure completely got whacked because Bernie brought up her Wall Street connections, you know, which were factual. That's not her shooting Vince Foster or eating dead baby flesh at the MENA airport or any of that kind of stuff. No, that was real. Her Wall Street connections were real. And she went all Lois Griffin and hollered, Wall Street 9/11? I was the senator for Wall Street. And in that moment, I knew that she was not much gonna be because see, if you're doing all your homework and you're preparing for all the debates and everything, the minute in practice she says, "I was the senator from Wall Street," well, that's where Robbie Mook looks at you and says, "Yeah, Hills, you were, but don't you ever, never, ever say that in public. Because you will wear that like an albatross around your neck, ma'am." But she said it. And it was proof that this was a one foot in a bucket campaign. And it was full of that kind of stuff. You remember when she said men were going off the reservation? Yeah, that's another thing you don't say. Yeah. But I just remembered that earlier today, and I realized it. That campaign was doomed from the outset. Of course, I'd said that a long time before. Let's see. Mike in Cascadia just shared this from somebody named Cassie Hewitt. A picture of a red, white, and blue flag, American flag-themed elephant. By the way, lines are open. Get things fired up. One line's tied up, but the stress line's open if you want to jump in. 304-663-4676. Carol points out, "I spent the day listening to the Trumpansies telling me how they've suffered for 8 years, so I need to be respectful of their chance for this to fix this country." Carol notes, "I've said fuck you a lot today." Yeah, I won't be a collaborator because, see, I remember what happens to collaborators. The photographs are there. All you got to look up. All you got to do is look up, and it ain't pretty. But this Cassie Hewitt person said, "I'm not a racist. I'm not homophobic. I'm not sexist. I'm not a misogynist. I am for free market. I am for use of articles. I am for free market. I am for stronger foreign policy. I am for small business. I am for my family. I am Republican. With the results of the presidential election stirring up a vast amount of emotions, I think it is important to clarify something. Just because I'm Republican doesn't mean I'm heartless. The point of this is not to debate political policies. It is to highlight what it felt like to be a Republican college student the day after Donald Trump was elected president of the United States. On November 9th, I went to class, and in every single one, there was a somber attitude. Pre-lecture discussions were filled with phrases like, 'I am scared for our future,' 'I am scared to be gay,' 'How did this happen?' And by far the most bothersome people that voted for Trump are racist, sexist, misogynistic, homophobic, selfish rednecks. Even my professors opened class with the assumption that everyone was sad about the result of the election by saying things like, 'Let's not talk about last night, ever,' or 'No class on Friday, I'm house hunting in Canada.' Well, I was not sad. While I understand that many people found the result disheartening, I'm happy that the Republican Party is in office for the next 4 years. I am happy that trade and markets will once again be free." Notice the use of language. Markets have not been free over the last 8 years. They've been chained down. They've been chained down by that one in our White House. "I'm happy that we are going to attack terrorism more aggressively instead of being walked all over, as long as I don't have to do any of the attacking and I can be a fearsome keyboard warrior back here in the United States, so while some poor Hispanic kid or some poor-ass hillbilly or some poor black kid gets his brain splattered all over the fucking sand in the Middle East, you know, because make America great again."
I'm happy that jobs will be brought back into the United States. I'm happy that small business owners will finally be able to reap the benefits of hard work and dedication. Because, see, they've never been able to do that before. There's not a single small business left in America today because of that one in our White House. I'm happy that I voted in my first presidential election as a Republican. With that said, I'm not racist, sexist, misogynistic, or homophobic. My parents decided to raise my siblings and me closer to the city so that we did not grow up sheltered and ignorant of the diverse world around us. I have never once felt that I could not date or befriend someone because of their race, ethnicity, or gender identity. I just didn't do it because my daddy would beat the fuck out of me if I did. For that, I'm forever grateful to my parents for the way they raised me. The response to this election has made me and many other college students who voted Republican feel that we need to hide or downplay our satisfaction over our victory because of the fear that our opposing peers will label us.
Well, Cassie, I don't think your fellow students are doing a very good job downplaying anything. Witness the word nigger scrawled all over a schoolroom door. Or students told that niggers need to pick cotton. Cassie, I don't think y'all are shrinking violets.
That is not right. The controversy surrounding both candidates during this election took voting based on character out of the question. In my opinion, neither candidate has outstanding character.
Yeah, one of them admits committing rape. The other one you think has character issues because of a made-up nothing burger about Benghazi and fucking emails. Jesus, you're stupid, Cassie.
In my opinion, silencing those who simply exercise their right to vote in our free nation violates the core principles for which our country stands. Well, what about the people who didn't get to vote in our free nation, but desperately wanted to, but Republican policies, Cassie, kept them from being able to by virtue of voter suppression and hard and soft voter suppression, voter ID laws that had no rational relationship to facts. Oh, well, too bad for them. If they wanted to vote, they could have not been born black or Latino. I am by no means saying that those who are not happy with the results of the election do not have the right to mourn.
Oh, well, isn't that just privilegedly sweet of you, Cassie? Damn.
However, I am saying that those of us who are content with the results should feel safe in expressing their joy and optimism for the future of this country without the fear of being ostracized.
Oh, okay, Cassie. So are you telling me that somebody out there has spray-painted your car with cracker or Nazi? Because, see, they haven't, Cassie. You're still safe in your privilege, dear.
I am a Republican. I still care. I am not heartless.
Cassie, I realize you're young. I, too, was once young.
But, Cassie, you voted for the candidate that the Ku Klux Klan endorsed. You got under the sheets with the Klan, Cassie. Now you cannot be heard to complain that you don't like the fact that everybody knows you got under the sheets with the Klan, Cassie. You're proud of your vote? Then stand up and own it, Cassie. Stand up and own it when y'all take health care away from several tens of millions of Americans, Cassie. Own it. When people die in emergency rooms because they weren't able to get ordinary wellness care. Cassie, own it.
I, for one, will not. Steve in New York, I'm sure Cassie loves all colors. Everyone ought to own one.
Note coming in from our buddy, the Angry Architect. Yo, Bob, I like you called it a long time ago when Hill got the nomination. I said to Mrs. Angry Architect that she won't win. They should have gone to Bernie. She said, what? People surely can't vote for Trump. I said, nope, she won't win. I didn't want to believe it either. I don't think anyone did. But from here across the ocean, what do I know? I have no polls, no U.S. channels on TV. Don't know what I tapped into that the papers or pundits didn't. My thoughts on it says that she did nothing to bridge the divide in the party after she got the nomination. Bad strategy, bad candidate. I wish it weren't true, but not the right time for more of the same. I don't know, but unfortunately, I don't think that people should be so shocked. It follows a similar pattern happening across the world. But the only way is up, yes. It will be okay eventually, and yes, in your lifetime. I hope, Angry. I do. But it wasn't hard to see. It was there. Thank you, Shorty in L.A. Shorty just sent in a contribution. Took care of fundraising for this evening. Shorty says, in the name of keeping the revolution on the air. That's how it works. That's how it works. Thank you, Shorty. Thank you, Luda. Luda checking in saying PayPal had been somewhat of a problem. Thank you, Luda, for kicking in. I can't thank you enough because I know what you're going through. Thank you, Luda. Thank you. Note coming from Ron and Raleigh. But, Bob, you have to understand, this is just these folks shedding the horrid shackles of political correctness. These folks aren't racists. They're just expressing themselves as the Constitution allows. Post will not claim any of these folks. Oh, and by the way, he's already betrayed them in one sense. His website has suddenly disappeared down the memory hole. What? The reference to banning Muslims. What are these poor, knuckle-breathing, mouth-walking little freaks going to do when he doesn't build the wall? What are they going to do when he find out when he actually finds out, because he's not a very curious or a bright man? What are they going to do when he actually finds out what the economic ramifications of unilaterally getting out of NAFTA will be? Huh? Ooh, Lordy, they're going to feel betrayed. Oh well, maybe. Maybe one of your clan buddies has a sheet you can cry into, you miserable bastards. Clarence with a note. The attitudes and behavior of the poorly uneducated and misinformed starts at home. Hatred is a taught, learned, and shared behavior. These folks have been conditioned to believe that they are better than any other group. That's from Clarence, and that's the truth. Marty, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Ah, the American people in their full flower. Steve in New York, not a Star Trek reference, but a Star Wars quotation. So this is how liberty dies, with thunderous applause. Padme Amidala. Note coming in from Scott and Punky, fixing the Democratic Party. Not sure that this is the way to proceed. Keith Ellis and Howard Dean offered as possible DNC chairs as Democrats seek to regroup. A year ago I might have been on board with putting Howard Dean back in charge of the DNC. I'm not there anymore. No, not after the tawdry things that he said in support of Madam Dr. First Lady, Senator Secretary, nominee loser Clinton. No. Marty says, after hearing you read that letter, I feel the need to re-listen to the first scene from The Newsman. The Jeff Daniels thing? That wasn't The Newsman, but The Newsroom. Yeah. I thought of the same thing. I saw Precious Candace there standing up in the room and asking, how great is America? Laurel says that Bill McKibben, co-founder of 350.org, says the damage from this election will be measured in geologic time. Most likely. And there's stuff that we dare not even give voice to. What happens when the shit really hits the fan? Climate change-ish wise, as if it hasn't already. And the world looks at the United States as the one institution, the one nation standing between humanity and survival. What does the rest of the world do to us to bring us into line? Now, that's not a fun thought, is it? Okay, let me go over to... just because I've been having some issues. Are you still there? No. Okay. Then we will run over to the Skype line and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy, you okay?
I'm here. I'm good. I don't know what was happening with my phone last night, but whatever.
I figured it was me.
No. It might have been a combination because I would hear you, the broadcast, you know, so I can know that I'm on hold, and then it would disappear, and it was a hot mess. But I think it was probably best that I didn't talk last night because I was listening to Scott, and God loves him, God bless him, but I you know, some of the stuff that he was saying, my blood was boiling. And the only thing I could think of was white male privilege. And I know he didn't mean it to be condescending or patronizing, but that's how it came across. And I'm pretty sure. And I heard some of the.
You're not the only one who pushed back against those remarks.
No, and I know I wasn't. And like I said, it's probably best that I didn't talk last night because. It wouldn't have come out. It would have just came across as both angry black woman. But I have been doing some reflection. I haven't cried yet, again today, which is a good sign. Jan and I had a no news zone. Today was actually the first time that the TV's been on any news station. And, every time I, you know, her host, I just had to leave the room, and Jan basically turned off the TV. Yesterday, I had this wonderful contraption, you know, and I'm pretty sure you know, I don't even think you need a Fire Stick to do this, just give the internet, it's called, this app called Kodi, and for whatever the reason, you can watch anything, any movie, even television show, and it's free. I tested it out the other day, Homicide: Life on the Street, every single episode, every season. I didn't watch them all, but obviously.
Yeah, that and The Wire, you can do some binge watching.
Exactly. And so the thing is, Janet and I decided that we weren't going to be watching, you know, broadcast television for a while. But in our delirium and in our hurt and in our pain, I came up with a wonderful idea, Bob.
Yes.
I decided that I'm going to have meetings at my house. Our first one is on Sunday.
Billable Rick mentioned something about that.
Yes, and I invited him, and anybody that lives, anybody in the Horn family that lives in Southern California or Los Angeles or what have you, that you, I'm on Facebook. You know, I posted enough on the Horn page. You could private message me. So basically, we're going to get together, black, white, indifferent, Hispanic, whoever I can gather. We're going to talk about race. We're going to talk about where do we go from here? We're going to talk about the things that for all my life, whenever I said, this is racist, and some white person say, oh, you're overreacting, that's not so, and all this. Now do you believe me? Now do you believe when I say somebody's being racist? Do you not understand? I know I'm black. I know the varying degrees of racism because I have lived them all my life. I have been called nigger. I have been called nigger bitch. I have now, my newest one, I've been called dyke. I have been called every vicious, vile name that you can think of to call a person, a woman of color, or whatever the case may be. I know racism. I know that sort of racism, and I know that condescending, benign racism when somebody walks up and wants to touch my hair or ask me, how do I wash my hair? Or, you know, say, you know, or start the phrase.
With, I mean, racist. With your hands? I mean, is there a special secret hair washing device that white folks don't know about?
Well, see, because I wear locks. So obviously there's a different shampoo kind of stuff that I have to do because I wear locks. And that one.
Is it a secret? I mean, could you not open the Google and just type in quietly in your whiteness, hey, how does that black woman over there wash her locks?
Oh, no, my wife asked me that question. When we first, you know, because we had to do ask a black person. So I gave her the safety of asking all the, I said, this is the time where I still really love you and all this is new. This is the time that you can ask me all the questions as a white person you've always wanted to ask a black person. Go.
You know, you make me wonder, Tracy.
Wonder what? How do I wash my hair?
Mercifully, no. I just kind of looked inside my mind and went, have I ever had a moment when I wanted to ask a person of color, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm. And you have to think about it, though, don't you? Because you're going, oh, shit, have I?
No, I haven't. But two, damn, you know, just damn.
Isn't that, yeah, and that's, because
I figure folks wash their hair however they can best get their hair clean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, the I don't know, maybe it's Clairol's Herbal Essence or Suave, or maybe you can afford the fancy, expensive shit that they sell at the salon. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's, I mean, the instructions are on the goddamn bottle, Tracy. Lather, rinse, repeat.
And clean. And so, you know me well enough, because you've known me longer than my wife has. So you can only imagine what I mean. And basically I said, so this is, okay, I want you to sit. You might need to take, and me being, I'm going to say, you might have to take notes. So you got to pay attention because, you know, I'm about to let you into some secret, you know, secret voodoo shit now, all right? So this is how we wash our hair.
This is the way we wash our hair, wash our hair, wash our hair. This is the way
we... Okay, we put the shampoo in our hair, in our hands. We step back into the water. We get our hair wet. And we apply shampoo that's in our hair, and we start to lather our hair up. Once it has reached the desired consistency of the lather, we then rinse our hair. Are you getting this, Ethel? and once, when I said it the way I was saying it, in this condescendingly patronizing way I could say it, she's like, I'm an idiot. And I'm like, yep. you're an idiot.
Nah, just kind of just kind of clueless.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
I'm sure because you've talked about it in the past. You've also had your head rubbed.
Right. No, that has never happened. I was fortunate that I've never had that happen to me, but I have had, especially, you know, the white people. I've actually had a white woman actually just walk, reach up and through my hair. I grabbed her by the wrist and I said, no. What are you doing? You're assaulting. What are you doing? Cause she got off and I'm like, you were about to place your hand on my person. I'm protecting myself, stupid bitch. And see, now that we have this post as press, I can't even say president, post, in living in the place where they wanted it to turn back to white anyway, I have to worry about this. A friend of mine posted on her Facebook page. She has lived in Hollywood pretty much, you know, since she was a teenager. She's in her mid-30s now. Maybe three times over the course of the last few weeks. Well, actually, the last day, 2 days, she's been called nigga 3 times. You hear what I'm saying to you?
In one day?
So, in one day, 3 times. And lived in Hollywood pretty much 20 years of her life and never heard that word once. In all the years that she has lived in Hollywood, nigga. And then I'm listening to the stories that you've been reading. And so, like I said, with all you, you know, and so here's what I'm saying to white folks. And see, I haven't, you know, other than what I wrote about weeping may endure for it, and I'm like, you know, I'm not going to let no motherfucker steal my joy. I'm seriously considering getting, there's 3 sets of t-shirts that I'm considering getting, starting, doing that one, you know, basically have the Bible verse, you know, weeping may endure for the night, but joy comes in the morning. Come to the morning and do that, you know, the Bible verse, you know, in the back and say, I'm not going to let any motherfucker steal my joy. That's t-shirt number one. T-shirt number two will be, nigga, go back to Africa. And my response will be, can't go back to someplace I've never been. Go back to where you're from. What do you mean, Cleveland? I can't. I am not gonna be the noble Negro. I've never been a noble Negro, but I'm not gonna let subtle racism slide. I'm gonna call people on their racism. You know, even if they don't mean it, if they didn't even realize they're being racist, that's the only way you're gonna learn what you said was bullshit and it was racist. I am gonna be taking Krav Maga classes. I'm not playing because I have to protect myself, Bob. I can't.
Listen. I mean that's part of that long essay I posted on Facebook, Tracy. Everybody in this country who is afraid right now, Hispanics, Muslims, all people of color, disabled people, sick people, all the people that post. Slimed and vilified in order to whip his followers into a white, and I do mean white hot frenzy. All those people who are fearful right now have an absolutely perfected right to be afraid.
Absolutely.
There's nothing, and see, I don't know if you caught it, but I don't know how this happens, but there it turns out there are two misaggrieved white privilege 2016s. One of them is the one we talk about. The other one is Kaylee McEnany over on Chicken Noodle News. And she tried to white-splain Van Jones last night.
Did he say bitch?
He said everything but bitch.
He said everything.
No. You're done talking over me. I'm not going to put up with this. Not now. Not no more. And the upshot of what he said to her was, listen, you can't complain about people being afraid because of the things that your candidate said.
Has said. Daryl Baker said the same thing on the post, you know. And I used to preach Carol preaches. She's like, Terry, see, I'm just tired. I'm so tired. And so just fuck them off. Fuck them with a cactus. I'm like, ooh, ow. Okay.
I do have some, because, you know, secret information is just popping up all over the place this evening. I have some secret information for you, courtesy of Steve in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how a gay guy washes his hair. Radical stuff. I wet it. I put shampoo on it. I lather it. I rinse the soap out. Now, here's the gay part. I let it air dry. This is the best way to wash your hair. I wash mine the best way.
Oh, I get that quick. Well, how do you dry your hair?
With the air.
With the air. I don't blow dry my hair.
Well, the locks wouldn't last long, would they?
Well, no. Well, actually, we'll see, at times, depending on, like, in the, if it's cold outside, I might blow, just, I'm losing my hair. I'm really beginning to, because I have, seriously, I have a bald spot that's becoming more and more pronounced as I got it. I'm not looking as bad as Stevie Wonder by the head, but.
Even in the midst of our misery, you have, you're always working. One of those. By the way, Gerald has a question for you. I have an important question for Tracy. Hellman's or Miracle Whip?
Here we go again. Motherfucker. You know what, Gerald? See, I thought you were my homeboy. See, fuck you. Okay, you know, I just realized why I have such an aversion to mayonnaise. Besides from the fact, you know, the whole black thing.
Well, it's kind of slimy when, and nasty. I didn't come to it easily, but I finally tasted and went, wow, goddamn, this is good.
Well, see, what had happened was, growing up, remember how I tell stories about how broke we were? Mayonnaise sandwiches was a staple in my house. But I didn't even think about it until it really...
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. I grew up listening to my Depression-era parents tell me stories of mustard sandwiches.
Right.
Mustard is even cheaper than mayonnaise.
Absolutely, because mustard is just...
And they really did take mustard sandwiches to school for their lunch. You know, back in the days when we were all free and schools didn't feed children.
Right, you're so free.
Because freedom. You got a note here from Carol, and I think this is cool. Carol says, I wish I lived closer. I would love nothing more than to participate in Tracy's social gathering to discuss race. Nothing would please me more than to have a group of friends of all races and colors help white me discover my own hidden issues on race. I'm sure we all have them. And I'm not afraid to find out where I can be a better person to my fellow humans.
Mm-hmm.
Asa also said, Tracy's at-home meetings will only go on until Trump's KGB or FBI starts watching and dismantling opposition groups. In other words, by March of 2017. And Asa is, you know, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but there's an element of truth there. And that is that, you know, your idea is a good idea, and it would, and it's something that should probably replicate across the country.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Because what can come out of that is a means of us to come together and take care of each other and support each other and lift each other up. And I know that sounds terribly, terribly kumbaya for a mean, bad person like me to say. But that stuff works.
It works.
The whole reason behind the horn had to do with the fact that a long, long time ago, when I was not in radio, I used to go up and down the road listening to, AM radio, and there was nothing on it but right-wing filth.
Oh, God.
And at night,
if I held my tongue just right and grounded myself against the car, I could bring in Malloy on WLS out of Chicago. And that helped. That helped.
Before the internet.
Yeah, oh, yeah, this is pre-internet. That helped, pre-streaming. And I thought, I know that there are liberals in this country. And maybe, just maybe, we could get something started where liberals could talk together and not have to put up with any right-wing horse shit.
And this is, and so, Bob, it's so funny how it came to me. I woke up yesterday morning, and I was just proud of myself that I actually got up. And when I say thank God I'm on meds, seriously, praise Jesus that I started therapy right on time. And that I'm on, you know, I'm still, you know, I haven't started anti-anxiety meds or the meds to help me pay it, you know, to stay focused, because, you know, Mama Tracy can go off on a tangent. But thank God for the tutor. Because so my wife, she said, baby, you got to get up, you got to go. And I got up, Bob, without an issue. At first, I was, you know, I'm hearing slipping into darkness. And then all of a sudden, what kicked in is a song by, if you guys get a chance, it's called, it's Kirk Franklin's Smile. And it's like, things are going to get better when you smile. You look so much better when you smile. And I'm like, I'm not going to let this motherfucker. And that's when that whole weeping indoors for the night, joy surely cometh in the morning. That was that moment of clarity for me, Bob. And I'm not going to let this motherfucker steal my joy. And so then I started calling my friends, you know, let's get together, you know. And then what started off as just coming over to my house just to talk and stuff, it slowly evolved into, let's talk about race. And of course, most of the friends that I've invited were white, you know, of like-minded. And I'm like, I have clergy coming. I have a friend that's, you know, well, she can't come this time, that teaches meditation. I'm going to have, you know, once I get it together, maybe even do a drum circle. Whatever it takes to get the conversation started. Because we have to have these. See, because I've been yelling, like I said, for 100 years of my life on this earth, that feels, this 50 all of a sudden feels like 100. I have been screaming at the top of my lungs that we need to have these fucking conversations. It's because, see, this is where the noble Negro leaves the room and Tracy comes back. Like white people, listen to me and listen to me good. For all the times that you didn't say anything when somebody said something racist, whether it be a coworker or even worse, a family member. For every time you poo-pooed a person of color and said, oh, you're overreacting. That's not racist. That's just how people talk. They just don't know any better. For every goddamn time, you said we don't need ethnic education in schools. For every goddamn time, that people just said, well, you know, things are bad, but it'll get better. Just patient. For every time somebody said, we just wait, it'll be okay. Ask Martin Luther King when he wrote his, why we cannot wait. We can't wait anymore. And so now white folks, now you're understanding what black people have been feeling ever since the first lovely boat ride we got over to this bitch. Now you're going to know what it feels like to be a second-class citizen. Now you're going to know what it's like to be chastised and looked like at, well, you know, because the Trump pansies are in full steam now, baby. I'm already hearing about Secretary of State, possibly Gingrich, Attorney General Giuliani.
Wait. Don't steal this one from me. I get to say this one. Secretary of the Interior.
There you can say it.
Sarah Palin.
Yes. For every time you thought a black person, when they bore their soul to you and actually felt that you were a safe person to talk to about what they feel about race, and you dismissed it? Well, hello, baby. Welcome to our world. Welcome to
in a place where, not to make it all about, you know, white folks, but I guess I'm sorry, but in a place like West Virginia, where we are circling the drain, and they promised that just electing post will put a stopper in the tub, and the tub will start filling back up with lovely, lovely coal sludge. When that doesn't happen, they're going to be pissed.
They're going to be pissed.
They're going to be real mad. And they're going to be real mad, and they're not going to have anybody to blame. Here in West Virginia, they got them a legislature. They got them a former Republican governor who's going to do anything that legislature wants to do. They kept their pill-pushing Republican attorney general, and now they've got the White House, the House, the Senate, and the Supreme Court. They have everything and zero excuses. And again, I don't collaborate. But here's the downside. Since I've gone into the prognostication business, apparently, being how I'm so good at it, when nothing happens, when it keeps falling apart, they will blame the likes of us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, y'all won't give him a chance. Y'all won't reach across the aisle. Goddamn. And my only answer is, I don't collaborate with fascists.
Exactly.
Y'all need to grow the hell up and own this shit.
Own this shit, bitches.
Yeah, I read somewhere on somebody's thread earlier today where a fella said that he hoped that Post would be impeached or, you know, be ruined by the lawsuits or maybe just have a big old coronary. And there was immediately some aggrieved Trumpansy saying, well, that's mighty that's mighty kind of you loving liberals. And, well, you know, away went my fat little typing thumbs. It's kind of tough with a little telephone keyboard. Half the time when I'm trying to type fuck you, it comes out Saskatchewan.
Goddamn autocorrect.
There we go. But I said, well, you know, you'll have to forgive us because we learned it from you compassionate conservatives who spent 8 years, Christians did, engaged in what they call imprecatory prayer, in which they prayed daily for Barack Obama to die in office. And they quoted from their precious little Bible. Let his days be short upon the earth. Let his wife be a widow and his children be without a father. 8 years of that shit. So if one guy who in the middle of some misery says, I hope that 70-year-old has a coronary, you know, you're just going to have to suffer quietly.
You're just going to have to deal with the bitches. And see, this is the thing, because this is like Carol Baker, you... So I cut, and I could hear your show last. The same thing, because that is that seething anger. And this, you know, all of a sudden they want to be, like you said, a fucking kumbaya motherfucker. I am going to do my damnedest. Because see, when I talk about these meetings and these get togethers that I'm having, and I do hope they replicate, you know, Carol Baker, just because, honey, I know you have some black friends. I know you're, I don't know about, you know, his Senate friends in Alabama, but approach them with it. Or if you want, say, look, you know, hook me up with them and I'll talk to them if you don't feel comfortable making that approaching people of color. Because, see, we have to have these conversations, especially in places like
Alabama.
Well,
that's kind of what I was trying to get at yesterday, Tracy. And I know this sounds kumbaya, but for those of us who are pale and did not support the Klan's candidate,
a dialogue can start with something as simple as smiling and saying good morning or hello or how are you. You know, you don't have to bust out all salam alaikum, you know, brother. You don't have to do that.
No. Well, just a smile.
Just be a decent human being, and that by itself will open a door.
Because let me tell you, honey, we don't know who is, you know, because we as people of color have pretty much figured, we know it's not all white people. We know that. Half and ever, you don't know which ones you are, as far as Trump and Zoom.
Right. No. Look. Americans of color, I understand right here, right now, if the default position is to look at a white person and assume you're looking at a Trumpanzee.
Yep.
It's on me to say I'm not. It is on me to reject it.
Because I can't.
At least that's the way I perceive it.
And that's the only, and when a white person smiles at me now, like I smile at white people, I'm at that point where I'm smiling at white people and hoping to scare them because, you know, especially if they're a Trumpanzee, well, why is the Negro smiling at me? Or does the Negro know? Does the Negro know that I'm a Trumpanzee? Is she going to expose me? You know, see, I wear glasses full time now. So, you know, maybe they think that I have those special glasses that'll show that I can, you know, root out the Trumpanzee. Just from looking at them because of their aura, because of my special glasses. I wish it was just that simple. But I've decided, like I said, when I made that decision to turn this into a conversation about race and what we do, and most importantly, also self-care and how we take care of each other for the next 2 to 4 years and how we need to hit the ground running about who we're going to have running the DNC. I was reading, somebody sent me a text message earlier. Well, not so much a text message, but it was in response to my, about the Bernie Sanders thing when he basically said, we need a Trump. We need somebody that's charismatic, that has the message, that is tapping into what is happening with this, within this country. The fear, the disenfranchisement. What is that word I'm trying to say? You know, whatever that word is, the disenfranchised. Thank you. The ones, the poor, aggrieved, right folks. Donald Trump tapped into that fear, and he did a hell of a job because everybody they rejected everything that these people had to say. So what is it? Oh, they were talking about something about a brother that's supposed to be trying to run the DNC. Do you know who Eric was? It or Keith
Ellison. Ellison? Yeah.
So that's who
not just a brother, not just a brother, but a Muslim.
Yeah.
Took his oath of office into the Congress on Jefferson's very own copy of the Koran, which Jefferson himself probably occasionally said, Sally, bring me that Koran. I want to read it some. Sit on my lap, Sally, and I'll read it to you, too.
Exactly.
Sorry, that was gratuitous and uncalled for, and I apologize, but I don't.
No, but see, this, when we talk about new blood, when we talk about starting the conversation and moving toward a different direction, the same old white old is not going to work anymore. You need to start inviting other folks into the conversation. You need to start looking and talking to, because the Republicans are getting to the, you know, do you think they're not grooming, you know, Jeb Bush's son at this very moment? Are you kidding me with this shit? You know, they're going to start becoming more politics because see that they got the Cheeto in and he is, does he even have the vocabulary of a fifth grader?
Third grader. It was analyzed. It's third grade.
Third grade vocabulary.
And by the way, I just want to interject something real quick. And then, if you don't mind, Tracy, we're gonna open up the lines because people are beginning to.
Yes, because I got to go. Because guess what?
But just one thing. I know. It's one of those nasty things that comes with the job. But I could have done without Barack Obama today talking about how productive his meeting with Donald Trump was. How about you just come out and say, "Yeah, we had a meeting. Wasn't that cool?" And then, of course, Post coming out and saying, Barack Obama is a decent, good man.
Oh.
Well, half of the Trumpanzees are probably in a white, and I do mean white hot rage over that all by itself.
Exactly.
Hillary's basket was not big enough.
Nope. A basket of deplorable. So, on that note, I am out. Got, you know, we're gonna get through this. We're gonna be all right. But seriously, Carol, have those meetings. Find some black friends. Talk to some black. Just smile.
Well, see, that's the nice thing. Carol works in a place where she is the only white woman in the building. So she's kind of having those meetings every day as it is.
Good for her. Well, on that note, I am out. Tracy Porter out. Y'all have a good evening. And I will be, who knows, I might be calling tomorrow on the front porch.
All right. Well, you know, I guess we'll have a foreshortened front porch tomorrow. That's a program announcement anyway, because I'm going to be filling in for Malloy from 9 to 11. So we got that going for us. All right. Well, Tracy, you have a good night.
I will. Good night, all.
Bye now. And let's see. Got some messages I got to share here. And I'm going to the stress line next. But there are things that need to be said. Ray just wrote in, subject line, scarecrows, tin men, and lions. It's almost amusing to hear people so much more frightened of a reality TV ass clown than they were of Cheney and Rumsfeld. This is not the end of the world. We survived. We survived. West Germany survived Hitler. Russia survived Stalin. Well, you know, there's a few million people who couldn't say that, but we'll work with the analogy. Life will go on. Would you rather be an Iraqi 20 years ago or a Syrian now? Compared to most of the people on this planet, we're still living in the luxury penthouse of the planet. That's true. We've got it, in large part, this country has it better than most of the rest of the world. But there's also an argument to be made that that's why that the rest of the world needs lifting up, not us driven down. But we're going to get driven down. And the first people getting driven down are going to be people of color, the LGBTQ community, Hispanics, Muslims, people who need to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick, people who are disabled, anyone who is not a glorious member of the Trumpanzee army. And yes, Ray, I am more afraid of these assholes than I was of Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld. They were evil. These people are nuts. So, you know, not saying, just saying. As to who they'll blame when it doesn't work out, Michael and Madison reminds me, they'll blame Obama. He'll still be black in 4 years. Well, that. Kim in New Jersey, The Hate Chronicles. These horrific stories of right-wing hate incidents are so disturbing. Ordinarily, it might be great motivation for liberals to get out and vote next time, but very sadly, next time will be too late for almost all of us. We all hoped that we had gotten just a little beyond the racism, bigotry, and homophobia. I think it is clear now that we haven't. The sad part is that most of the upcoming damage to social justice will be irreversible during the lifetimes of almost every living person. When Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare, and marriage equality are gone, they will be gone forever. There is no recovery in our future. No, it will never be okay again. Please, everyone, stop saying it will be okay. It will never be okay.
And maybe instead of saying that, we say we will look to try to get each other's backs. And this isn't all that Kim wrote. I'm going to finish what he wrote, but there are places where there are at least enclaves of decent human beings. Larger cities, you're more likely to find camaraderie and common cause. If you're like David in South Carolina, if you're like Charlie in Tennistan, if you're like a bunch of my progressive buddies in Alabama, if you're like me, down here behind the cornpone curtain, you are in many ways an exile in your own land. Why don't you move, Bob? Well, I don't know. Somebody send me the price of a house in Oregon or Washington, and I'll be on my way. Till then, I'm kind of screwed. It's going to be a little harder here, but I got Boss Man Wayne, and I've got one of the best progressives that I've ever known in Dr. Bill O'Brien. So, I mean, that's hopeful. Kim says, let's stop blaming Hillary for losing this shitty mess. It is pointless to blame her. We are in this hellish mess because the hateful Nazis got out to vote and we didn't. Comey gave them all the motivation they needed. His bullshit took thousands of liberals out of the mix. They just stayed home or decided to vote for him instead. I feel your pain. I think that many liberals are upset, but I simply don't think they feel the pain as much as those of us who will be losing tangibles like health care and marriage equality in the very immediate future. Yes, we all know we will be losing future Social Security and Medicare, but those are future losses. Minorities are already feeling immediate pain from this hot mess already. So fucking depressed. Kim signed, totally depressed in New Jersey. Kim. I don't necessarily know that I'm blaming Hillary for the loss, but we had better, by God, talk about why she lost, or else we'll nominate another goddamn Hillary in 2020. And we'll be sitting around sticky, broken, confused on the evening of November the 3rd or whatever the hell, 2020, wondering why we couldn't get rid of the post, or by, who knows, by that time, President Pence. If we don't understand how the Democratic superstructure absolutely fucked this sideways, then enjoy the time in the wilderness, because it's going to get lengthy. I think the analysis, Kim, is warranted. We listened to a lot of people that did not deserve to be listened to when they more or less anointed Hillary Clinton in 2008. How do you run a one-time loser who couldn't even make it past the primary process and think that she's going to be any better in the general? What were they thinking? Oh, yeah, I know, the whole I'm with her crowd. And I understand the aspirational beauty of having a first woman president. I voted for her to be that first woman president, just like I voted for Barack Obama to be the first black president. But in neither case did being a woman or being black motivate my white guy vote. I voted for the candidate I thought was best for the job. I did the same thing in the primaries. So let's see, how many more boxes do we... Well, we've still got first woman president to check off. We've got first Hispanic president to check off. If we discount James Buchanan, the worst president in American history, we've got first openly gay. We've got first gay president to check off. You know the one we've really got to check off, and if we're going to play chromosomal politics, I'd like to see us do this first. How about first American president? How about, you know, an American Indian, a Native American?
short of a first black president, I'd say they've pretty, the indigenous population, they've got a claim to needing that box checked off. But maybe we're better off letting the process sort itself organically. Maybe in 2020 we get first woman president Elizabeth Warren, who was the first woman president that the vast majority of this community would have gladly supported. And hey, as Asa points out, we've already checked off first Nazi president and first orange president in one fell swoop. So we got that going for us. Let's see. Tosh writes, listening to the opening Wednesday night and a question struck me. I'd love to hear it discussed, but having never managed to call in, no, I'm not afraid, just saying. Not saying, just saying. If Hillary or even Bernie had been talking about real solutions to the alleged problems of the disillusioned blue-collar whites, do we honestly think it would have made a difference? Well, I mean, yeah, Bernie was. I think not all too many of my suburban brethren are there for reasons that make them the deplorables that Secretary Clinton mentioned. For example, the close suburbs of Baltimore were largely created in the early 1960s as whites bugged out of their row houses when blacks moved in. Some were reluctant migrants. My parents were forced to move when their landlord went bankrupt after his other white tenants split. My parents were quite comfortable with black folks, having grown up where the black population was minuscule, Montana and Vermont, respectively. This, coupled with the demonization that Secretary Clinton, some plainly illegal, has received over 20-plus years, pretty much made the idea that the right-wing nut jobs would stay home or vote HRC slim to none. Interesting, even in defeat, the popular vote suggests that without the Electoral College, the last time the U.S. would have elected a Republican president would have been 1988. Whoa! Ponder that! 2004 goes to Al Gore's re-election. As was pointed out by John Fugelsang, there has not been a Democrat newly elected except after times of GOP destruction. 1992 recession was enough for Clinton. Back to World War I, 1988 and 1928 are the only times the presidency stayed with the same party. Tosh says, by the way, I'll send a few bucks in tonight. Thank you, Tosh. Thank you very kindly. There are some statistical things that arise out of this election that are awfully damned interesting. There are things that are absolutely counterintuitive. Those working class voters, Trump got 41% of those who earned under $30,000 a year, 42% of those between $30,000 and $50,000. Those who make over $50,000 a year in income supported him more. But Hillary got the under $30,000 crowd and the $30,000 to $50,000 crowd. Here's one of the places where the difference happened. The people who said they hated Trump with the heat of a thousand suns, well, Hillary Clinton was only able to get 39% of them. Post got 51% of the people who hated Clinton with a white, and I do mean white, hot passion. It goes on like that. It's quite fascinating. Let's run over and check in on the stress line. Are you there, Scott?
Yeah. Hi, Bob. How you doing? Let me turn off the fan. It's ungodly hot here at San Diego today. In November? Are you kidding? Jesus.
Well, I mean, I thought it was always like something. I thought it was always like 85 and sunny in San Diego.
No, normally by this time of year, it drops down to a reasonable 75 or 78. And I don't have AC, so that always makes it an adventure.
Wow.
But anyway, I didn't call to talk about the weather. I'm really, truly sorry that there wasn't a way or that you didn't see fit to tie me into the conversation with Tracy. Because she left something hanging in her conversation today that troubles me deeply. Apparently, she chalked up some of my remarks yesterday when I called in to a matter of white privilege. And I know that she and Jan make it down here to San Diego every now and again. But the next time they're down this way, I invite them both in for either a mayonnaise or a mustard sandwich. And to give them the grand tour, it'll only take about 4 minutes, to see what white privilege looks like here in America's finest city. And I'll leave it at that. If she wants to pursue it further and maybe directly state what it was that I said specifically that caused her to come to that conclusion, she can feel free to message me privately on Facebook. Because I resent the implication and certainly disagree with it. I mean, I'm not responsible for her hearing. I am, however, responsible for my speaking. And it's possible that in frustration or in delivery or in artful construction of my comments, that something came out and was heard a certain way. It certainly wasn't my intention. I don't like to leave stuff like that hanging because it's not good for me as a person. It's not even good for Tracy, I don't think, as a person. And she doesn't know me, obviously. What she knows of me, she knows from my conversations to you and maybe to Malloy. But there's a good deal more to me than is readily available in these conversations. It may be noticeable to people who can read between the lines. But anyway, it shouldn't be left out there, and I will endeavor, as I'm able to address it with her personally rather than tie you up and show up with this little drama.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, you know, during the course of the conversation last night, you were getting some pushback even there. But, you know, the purpose of what we're doing here is to try to provide a forum for people of goodwill to engage in goodwill conversation. So, consequently, you know, it's, you know, the response is not, you know, why are you? It's relatively gentle. It is a far cry from what you get in many other places, because this has become known as a place that is largely safe for even spirited conversation.
Yeah, and that's true. It is. That's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons I like this program and the people who call it. And really, I really get that we're all frustrated and confused and not sure where to turn or what to do. But you made a point the other night, I think, and have made this similar point in programs past, that the very last thing we need to do is to go at each other's throats, metaphorically or literally.
Yeah, I mean, we do. This is no time for lining up the circular firing squad.
Yeah, because that is not helpful. It doesn't move us a single millimeter closer to our shared positive liberal or progressive goals. It just causes problems in the ranks, and we got enough problems outside the ranks without problems within the ranks.
Well, the only way we overcome this, the only way we save this country, is if we can coalesce and overcome the things that were obviously a problem to us in this election cycle, Scott, and that includes you know, I mean, that includes everybody who wants to participate in this of goodwill. You know, I want to fix, and there are already people out there putting some ideas out. I want to fix the Democratic Party. Among other things, Michael Moore has already jumped out and volunteered to lead. I loved that. The resistance. We got to have a leader. And part of his early suggestion is that we've got to start a movement to get rid of superdelegates inside the Democratic Party, which incidentally is something that I've been hollering for well over a year now. They got to go. They're anti-democratic.
and they're nothing but a means by which, and yeah, okay, I recognize the reality. If there had been superdelegates, we might never have gotten Post as the nominee. I recognize that. But you know what? The Republican, say what you will, and the man is the man is a goddamn Klansman, Nazi supported, enabler of hate and misogyny and everything else. But guess what, Scott? He is who the Republican Party overwhelmingly wanted. And nobody in the Republican Party had their thumb on the scales. And we're just lying to ourselves if we admit that the DNC did not have their thumb on the scales. Are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm just
okay.
Listening.
No, I got a beep and I never know anymore. I got to do some tweaking with my cell provider for this phone. But the DNC had their thumb on the scales. One DNC staffer apparently wrote to Donna Brazile, old age will kill you. Climate change is going to kill me.
And who sent that to her?
A member of the DNC staff.
To Donna Brazile.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And, I mean, there has to be a thorough house cleaning, and, you know, I'm going to jump out there early and say, no, not Howard Dean. Not Howard Dean. And, Keith Ellison, absolutely. Or, you know who else? Raul Grijalva. Or maybe just like they successfully perform as co-chairs of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. How about both of them?
Which see, this would be Dean's second go round. Which presidential campaign was he head of the DNC during? It was Kerry's, wasn't it?
Well, no, he engineered the 50 state strategy that led to the election of Barack Obama.
Okay.
And see, that's another thing, Scott. Sooner or later, there was a book, and it just pissed me right off several years ago. I can't remember the author's name, but I hope he's eating his goddamn book one page at a time. Called Whistling Past Dixie. Arguing, you know, fuck all those southern states. We've got California. We got Washington. We got Oregon. We got New York and Pennsylvania and Massachusetts and Michigan and Wisconsin and Minnesota. Fuck all them red states. All we have to do is have just enough to win. Well, guess.
Well, I think that was disproven the other night.
That horse ran right out of the burning barn and is long damn gone.
In fairness to my red state people, whether they're chimpanzees or not, I had never considered red state people to be just peons in flyover country. Because, Jesus, for a good part of my life, I lived at various parts in that very area of the world, of the country. I mean, I get where they're coming from. I get that they're afraid. I get that they're angry. I get that they're not broadly well-informed, and I get that a lot of those three conditions move them in the direction of seeing Trump as a viable choice. What I don't get, and maybe it's too soon to know, is what will they be saying 6 months or a year and a half from now, you know, in the realm of buyer's remorse. I think there's going to be a lot of that. A lot more of that than is readily apparent right now, because messiahs, you know, they tend to lose their halo and their sheen quite quickly. And it varies from person to person and party to party. And I think Trump's theme song is great, though the message is lost on his supporters. You can't always get what you want. And if there's any hope from this orange bastard, I hope it's that he disappoints some of his very own people.
Well, and the thing is, to a certain extent, Scott, he's playing with fire. Because
the people that
put him, and he's doing it with a lot of hairspray on his head. I mean, do you know how fast that shit can go up?
Yeah. Never mind how Tracy washes her hair. Never mind how Tracy washes her hair. I want to know how that orange son of a bitch washes his. But never mind.
He probably has little organisms that crawl around through it at night underneath the hair net and eat up all the particles of spray so that he can stop.
Well, there went my lunch. But but yeah. But he is. He really is playing with fire, because if he doesn't come through with that goddamn wall, if he does not start rounding up 11.5 million people in this country, if he does not enact a Muslim ban, if he doesn't do all the fascist goddamn things he promised, one of them will take his orange ass down.
Well, yes, and that's what I'm getting at in terms of buyer's remorse. I'm not saying that we're afraid for nothing. I'm saying that the full impact of this hasn't kicked in, and he will not have as easy a time of it as everybody is afraid he will.
No. I disagree. He's going to have a cakewalk as far as president goes, because he's going to have a Congress that's going to set the agenda, do whatever the hell they want, and all he has to do is sign the papers. He's going to be like Governor LaFucking Petamane in Blazing Saddles. Work, 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 work. And he'll lean over and stick his goddamn beak in Melanoma's cleavage and say, "Hello, boys, did you miss me?" And all the nasty ass little sycophants will be sitting over there. "I didn't get a harump out of that guy. Watch your ass."
Now, who plays the part of Slim Pickens in this modern day incarnation of Blazing Saddles?
That may take a little work. I'd hate to insult Slim Pickens by comparing him to any Trumpanzee. But point well taken. Oh, how about Steve Bannon as Hedley Lamarr? No, wait, Rudy Giuliani. No, wait, Chris Christie. Hedley! Hey, Scott, have yourself a good evening, man. I'm gonna keep things rolling. You take care. And all right, and say goodnight to Punky for me, too.
Okay, man, take care.
All right, later. And that is Scott in San Diego. Let's see. Okay. So, all right. Pardon my screw-ups of the stress line, but I've got to get the call waiting turned off on it, and I have to actually call the damn cell provider for that. It used to be turned off, and then it wasn't anymore. Let me run. Let's see. A couple of notes. This from Gerald, who says, oh, and by the way, let me just mention, on those nights when someone generously takes care of an entire program's fundraising, it's awfully good if folks can still jump in alongside. And, you know, that's folks like Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus just jumped in, and Luda, who helped out a little bit ago. Yeah, we've taken care of fundraising. But I don't know. Going forward, if we're going to... I mean, I'll keep this going any way that I possibly can. But it would be nice if we could be completely, there's no such thing as completely, but be secure in this. And I'm not trying to come up with enough money to move to Mexico or Germany or Australia or New Zealand or Canada. I promise I'm not doing that. I'm just trying to keep this all on the air, because we don't have any advertisers, and it means the entire world when somebody puts up a big chunk of change, and then the rest of the community goes, "Hey, I want to help out. So, you know, whether it's the Postal Service or whether it's PayPal, having people willing to help is big. But as I was saying, a note from Gerald. Let's see. I'm not trying to be an asshole here. I got a call coming in on the stress line right now. All it says is restricted. Now, most of y'all, when y'all call in, I get some idea of where I'm hearing from. Maybe it's 702 or 608 or 310 or 818 or 256 or 304 or 816, whatever. And it's helpful if you don't block your phone number, because sometimes when a phone number is blocked, well, it makes me wonder if I'm going to be able to protect this space against a potential wingnut calling, because they are out in force and they very well may try to get into this program, and I won't have it. Now, I know y'all might enjoy the hell out of hearing me fight with a wingnut, but no, we created this safe space, and it's going to stay a safe space. So if you don't mind, if you want to reach the program, do me a favor and unblock your number. Okay? I don't think that's too odious a thing to ask. Onerous, I mean. Anyway, what Gerald had to say. You know, Bob, something the angry architect said earlier takes me back to the primaries and about how Hillary didn't try to bridge the gap between her and Bernie's supporters. I guess you could call it an epiphany for me. I remember while Hillary was winning the nomination that I got the feeling of, fuck you, we don't need you, we'll do it without you, from her supporters. You got a feeling? I got told that directly. We don't want your vote, you old white man. What was her name? Heather Bell, who used to write over at Crooks and Liars, pulled that shit. I never used a bad word or anything. I merely pointed out some of the flaws in Madam Dr. First Lady, Senator Secretary, nominee loser Clinton's campaign and background. Things that turned out to really, really matter for a lot of people. People whose votes she badly needed. So you got that feeling? I got that feeling, Gerald. And Gerald says, I'll be honest, I was hurt. I never, ever thought that people of my own party would treat me the way I was treated. I was shocked that such hateful words would come from liberals. Sour grapes? Nah, I think that's the wrong cliche. I think it's more like you reap what you sow. I voted for her, reluctantly, but I did. No, I don't own any of the terrible things about to come down the pike. And no, no effing kumbaya from me on the other side either. I don't collaborate. I don't collaborate with fascists. I'm within my generation, I'm kind of weird because I'm the child of older parents. So my dad had been home from the Second World War for 18 years when I was born. But I was taught early what it meant to sacrifice to defeat fascism. I was a child when I handled my uncle's Purple Heart and saw his flag and heard about the other great uncle who had died in the siege of Bastogne. Okay? And so, no, I don't collaborate with fascists. And as far as I'm concerned, this government has gone full on everything short of goose-stepping fascist. And that's one of the things that I pointed out in the past. It's one of the mistakes that we make is we think that fascism here has to look like classic traditional fascism. It will look like American fascism. There may not be goose-stepping. We certainly won't have snappy-ass, Hugo Boss or Carl, I don't know, the snappy-ass uniforms that the Germans had. No. And we won't necessarily be like Italian fascism or Spanish fascism, although the Trumpanzees just have elected a man who bears a striking resemblance to Benito Mussolini with fucking hair. We do have to sort out why this election became the disaster that it was. And part of that is going to be understanding the behavior of the privileged boomers
who were largely the driving force behind Clinton's campaign, and the nasty, nasty methods used by the DNC to try to short-circuit Bernie's. I am not willing to say that Bernie would have won. I know a lot of people are engaging in that. I won't do that. I personally think this country is sunk is a part of a fascist juggernaut. This is we are bad, and this is how bad we want to be. Any people who are motivated to vote for a man because of what he promises to do to the people that they've already decided they themselves don't like, yeah, that's not a mistake. That's fascism. It's kind of like the old bumper sticker that said, if your God hates all the same things you do, that's a pretty good indication that he's imaginary. Well, in this case, it's not imaginary. It's real. Let's run over to the Skype line where Todd is waiting down in South Carolina, Stan. Hey, Todd, you okay, man?
Yeah, I suppose. I could not hear Scott that well. I don't know if that's my phone, my connection. I don't know if anybody will listen and get back to you on that, but whatever. You know, we have to work with what we have. Credible candidates are slim pickings, apparently. And all through this, you kept saying that, you know, this was the weakest candidate we had.
Well, she was the most distrusted and most disliked nominee since, you know, James Buchanan, at least. And that's saying something. I mean, she was more disliked than George McGovern, Hubert Humphrey, Jimmy Carter, Walter Mondale, Al Gore.
You got to be really hated
to get that far down that scale.
Yeah, now you're getting into a bullet point that I wanted to bring up. You know, I really cannot mentally get around this shit. And you remember this. There was a poll taken, many polls, and they all showed the same thing. Halfway through the debate process on our side, every no matter what party you were in, people were asked, well, who do you think is the most honest candidate? Well, Bernie Sanders.
Yep. And yet today I was out on Facebook and I saw a post by someone I respect saying, I now regret ever having supported Bernie Sanders. His followers are just a bunch of anarchists and spoiled children. Well, no, 95% of us Bernie supporters voted for Hillary or somewhere like that.
And you know what? And I get pissed. I get really irritated when I hear people say, well, you know, Bernie let us down. No, he did not. And he absolutely made it very clear that if Hillary won, he would support her. I don't know what the hell these people were smoking, but I want some of it. Because he absolutely said
Because like today I saw that, you know, well, it's easy to say that he would have been a better candidate now and he would have thrashed Trump, but they would have worn him out with him being a socialist commie Jew.
Maybe,
but he never really got the chance. And frankly, the best proof of anybody wearing him out for being a socialist commie Jew is to be found within the Democratic National Committee, where they called him that.
Well, I think it was a person of Jewish, quote-unquote, persuasion, I'm not even going to get into that.
No, but again, you can't hang any of this on Bernie because Bernie endorsed her.
That's what he was supposed to do.
Bernie called on us to vote for her. And I said all the way through the process,
I'm going to do as my candidate asked. He didn't tell me. He asked that we do.
He asked, and if we look back, and it's easy to look back, and, I mean, if we look back, remember that debate where it was like, it was so shocking where all of a sudden he knew he wasn't going to win or something happened, and she just adopted his platform. At the end, it was like, what the fuck? Remember?
Yeah, but remember how Saturday Night Live made fun of her because she was adopting little chunks of his positions all along the way, and they did that one debate skit where Hillary said, "Why, as a matter of fact, I remember when I was a little girl growing up as a Jew in Brooklyn."
That's what got people watching Saturday Night Live again. That's when it got funny again. Exactly. So,
I mean,
know,
it was funny, but at the same time, it was true.
It was true, and it was disturbing.
But see, there was this sense all along, because it goes along with, you know, her, that she was conniving, that she was calculating. Maybe conniving is the wrong word, but that she was, you know, rather coldly calculating how to try to catch up with. Because she was way behind in momentum. I mean, it was not a joke to point out the fact that she could not fill a small town Rotary Club while Bernie was filling stadiums. That was right. Real, Todd.
It was real. She knew she didn't have the enthusiasm. She did not. She never really had the enthusiasm except for a small segment. Right.
Now let's be fair about Bernie's campaign. It was not well run, okay? His campaign in South Carolina was a disaster.
There was no campaign. It was like, if he was like, whatever, if you hadn't heard of me, then you don't know to hear about him. Forget about it.
But, you know, and that's the thing about, even if you have this pure, no filthy money political process, you still have to be competent as to the multiplicity of laws that you have to deal with to get on balance, run campaigns, all of that stuff, all right, before you've ever raised a dime. And Bernie, let us remember, was pressured into running, okay? Democracy,
absolutely.
Democracy for America, folks like that said, please, for Christ's sakes, Bernie, run. And they pressured and pressured, and petitions were signed. I think I signed a couple somewhere like, please run Bernie.
We all did. I did. I mean, that's when I was.
And so, he started his campaign with one foot in a bucket because he did not have the machine and he did not have anybody inside the DNC. Yes, the DNC was in the tank for Hillary. And what surprises me out of that is that there are neophytes running around there going, that ain't fair. Well, goddamn, Hillary's owned the DNC since 2008. You mean they're not going to... That's like having a Swiss watch. Okay, not a Swiss watch in the case of the DNC. It's kind of like having a Lithuanian watch. And...
Wait a minute.
and you live in Eastern time, and you set the watch for, I don't know, Ouagadougou Standard Time. The machines are built to run for a particular purpose, and the DNC machine was built to run Hillary. And so the DNC internal structure, Todd, took a lot of umbrage at having that damn upstart come along and primary her, because goddammit, it was her turn. And that's another thing I'm done with. Kindergarten politics. Nobody gets a fucking turn anymore. You get in there, root hog or die, tough hide lasts the longest, and you do it on a level playing field.
That's it, because there's only two ways. I mean, and, you know, I think, you know, we talked about this before the debacle. You know, it's nice to be, it's great. It's great to think about what people can do with a third party. But, and it's okay, maybe down ballot, you know, get somebody green to do things locally. But, you know, when you get to the federal level, it's just not set up that way, because what's going to happen, you're going to have to make concessions to even get to caucus with people, which means you're going to lose momentum. You're going to lose your power.
I mean, and Bernie's organization, in many instances, didn't have the first foggy clue about how to, you know, look at what happened in California. Those Byzantine, archaic goddamn laws are not designed to create ballot access, even in a liberal paradise. And Bernie's team had no clue about how to surmount that challenge. Hillary's people didn't write that. Hey, you know what? You know how we talked about how there were so few polling places in Maricopa County, Arizona? I remember after the Arizona primary how angry people were at Hillary for the fact that there were so few polling places. Well, that wasn't Hillary.
Nothing to do with that.
That wasn't Hillary's doing. Now, what she had done is she had, her team had significantly motivated people to vote early because they knew that people would be trapped in those interminably long lines. Bernie's campaign didn't do that because they were kind of playing it by ear and inventing it as they went along. Now, am I supposed to be mad at Hillary because they were efficient at that? You know, they were efficient. They were a reflection of their candidate. They were technocratically efficient, Todd, but they were humanistically flat-footed. Does that make sense? They knew all the laws. They knew about how to early vote and when to early vote, and they had the organizational structure to motivate people to get out and do that.
No,
but when
right.
it but right. when it came to their candidate needing to be able to actually connect with human beings, again, Saturday Night Live drilled her in the parody of the second debate, the town hall. Where she walked over and said,
"Yeah, I'm walking. This is
and I'm walking, and I'm three. Walking just like we planned. I would walk.
Well, and oh, look, I missed my mark. Wait, up. Oh, let me back up. Okay, now I'm okay.
And Patrice, your name is Patrice? No, it's Clara. Well, Clara,
that shit was fucked up.
You're a school teacher, right? No. Well, you've got kids, right? No. You like kids, right? No." Well, you're going to vote in this election. Yes. See, we're bonding.
Well, see, now you're getting into the organic part of what this was about. This was about the perceived outsider. This was about emotion and the perceived outsider. Once Hillary was out, all that was left was the fascist. And he had the emotion. And remember, see, we ought to remember, there's a reason that statistics work. In the Western world, we work with empirical evidence and statistics. And there's a reason for that shit, because usually it works. That's what it is. There's a confidence interval. That's why there's a margin for error. That's why you have, you know, that's why you have tails on each end of the bell curve, because most of the time that shit works. You see, this is the problem. Most people are average. That's why average is average. Most people are simple. Most people don't go to college. Most people don't take statistics. Most people don't understand the inner workings, the nuance. You know, they just know that they're hurting. And now that people are really hurting, most people are hurting. And once Bernie was out of it, then that's all you had left. I mean, how the fuck you got a lot of people? I mean, I would hear these people on the radio like, yeah, well, Bernie's out, so now I'm either not going to vote or I might vote for Trump. And I'm like, what? Because you're desperate.
You were the one, Todd,
who called this program kind of with your hair on fire because you'd seen a newspaper report from your beloved hometown, Philly, about black folks voting for Trump. And I remember that night, and you said, we better pay attention to this. This is real. And you weren't okay at the time. I think we had to talk about barbecue for about 30 minutes before we got you back down to the earth.
I was fucked. Yes. I'm glad you brought it up, Bob. I didn't want to go there, but I'm glad you brought it up. I didn't forget. I mean, I get out there, but I don't forget. And that's what concerned me. Right? And I saw this coming. I saw this shit coming, and it was like this Trump, and I hope you give me a little bit of time here because this shit was fucked. You know, and the first thing when you take statistics and you're in social sciences, the first thing they teach you is that the weakest data that you can get is self-reported data, which is why historians such as Dr. O'Brien. You know, when you get letters, it is self-reported data, but it's not data that's meant to be public. It's like self-reported, but it's not. It's real data. But when you ask people things, they're going to fucking lie if they feel like it. There were a lot of people who did not want to vote for Trump. I mean, who did not want to admit they were going to vote for Trump. Okay. So it's like the tines of a fork, and the fork was in favor of Trump. I don't want to say his name, in favor of the fascist guy.
We're simply calling him Post now, POST.
Post, correct.
Yeah, post. Piece of shit. All Trump.
Right. The Post fork, the Post fork. One time of the Post fork were folks that just wanted to blow the system up. And I'm not making this out for any kind of ethnic thing or racial whatever. This is just everything. So there was one time that just wants to see the system blown up because they feel like they're middle America. They're out in the middle of, you know, flyover territory, and they're not being served. That's the way they perceive their situation. That's one set of people. The other set of people, another sector of people, are just folks who are just like, look, this guy's saying what I like. You know, I'm an immigrant, and I'm here, and he's got the flag. See, and a lot of people underestimate. A lot of East Indians live in this country. And almost to the point, every East Indian I've ever met, they vote Republican. A lot of them like to go into business. If they're not in the medical field, they like to have their business. And if they don't hang with black folks, they're voting Republican. I've been around a lot of East Indians, a lot. You know, I've lived all over. All over up and down the East Coast. Never lived on the West Coast, but I'm just saying this has been my experience, so it's anecdotal, but I'm just saying, they have money. East Indians have money. They got a lot of money, and a lot of them vote Republican. But I'm not getting off on a tangent. So that's another kind of this fork. Then, of course, we have the neo-Nazi. You know, we don't have to talk about that. We know what that's about. You know, we got that kind of the fork. Then you got the young folks who don't know any better. And they're like, well, I'm hurting, he's a businessman, and he must know something, and they don't know his history because he's so damn old. I saw this shit coming.
Mm-hmm.
I called in the day before the election. I was concerned. I didn't feel it. I was not feeling it. Anyway, so it was the election of the outsider or the perceived outsider, you know, and now we are where we are. And, you know, I'm asking, and I got folks in the neighborhood. I'm living in a strange little pocket. Like, there's some white folks who live, there's a really wealthy neighborhood. Like, I mean, one block off, these folks have estates. Now, my street is all poor black people. They're all dead and down. These poor black folks. A lot of these poor black folks, the ones who did vote, a lot of them, you know, They voted for Trump. And see, they wouldn't say that before the election, the ones who would vote or could vote or cared about it. I saw a guy yesterday, and, you know, I don't know how it came up. And I was shocked. I said, but you know he's a fascist, right? And he got this, you know, that glazed look, like I was like, oh, he doesn't know what a fascist is. You know, he just didn't know. And once again, that's what Trump said. He loves the poorly educated.
Well, you know what's going to be, you know what's going to be interesting, Todd?
What?
I'm in full on prognosticating mode now. I'm going to make another prediction. There's going to come a time when you are not going to be able to find a single solitary soul in this country who will admit to ever having cast a vote for Donald Trump.
Oh, I agree. I absolutely agree. See, this is the thing. He's going to blow himself up. And this, you know, I'll be honest, I was so depressed. I felt beat up. Now, I have a good friend who works for the city, not this city, another city. And we've been back in touch, and she couldn't go to work because she was so upset. And we talked all night, and she works around a lot of civil servants. I mean, she's like close to the mayor's cabinet, you know, this and that. And she said, look, and she lives up where a lot of those folks live who don't look like her. You know, she bought a house up there. And she's like, look, I can't even go in there because I just can't look at them. And I take the train with them. And blah, blah, blah. I'm like, look, man, you got to get your shit together. This is plain old, excuse me, white lash. A lot of it. Because he can't do the shit he says he wants to do, number one, because of Congress. But on the flip side, maybe he can. Does that make any sense?
I think.
Well, his ideas are so irrational. A lot of his ideas are so irrational that the rank and file Republicans are, you know, most people, even if you're a Republican, you're not crazy like, I don't know, who's the most far right folk? I don't know. Like Marsha Blackburn, I don't know. My roots! You know, come on. It's not going to work. He just can't. They do this shit. This is ridiculous. But this is where we are now. And one thing, it's interesting. One thing I found very interesting. See, this shit is not making sense. Hillary, it's coming in now. Hillary won the popular vote. She didn't win the Electoral College, which is absolutely the reverse of what a lot of people thought would happen if it was going to work out this way. Because remember, the Electoral College, you know, it's like an unsaid rule. That's pretty much set in stone. Like, you could deviate, but, you know, you're not going to get reelected. So what happened there? That's a big question I wanted to ask you. So what happened there?
Well, in what regard?
Well, all right. Now, we all respect Nate Silver, but the Electoral College, those voters, right, these
mm-hmm.
people, they know that, you know, okay, they pretty much have a little meeting, and they're supposed, you know, it's like, yeah, I'm going to vote this way. Like, you don't have to, but you know you're not going to be another elector next time if you deviate from what you said. So that's how...
There's a nominal fine to a so-called faithless elector. Are you somehow hoping that maybe this can go sideways in the Electoral College?
Something's going on. There's something. Something's
oh, screwed. Look, I mean, one of the funniest things I've seen all day is a graphic that Michael and Madison sent me. Saw it earlier on Facebook. It is Nate Silver's face superimposed onto a Costco greeter. Welcome to Costco. I love you. And Michael titled it Nate Silver in 2 weeks. And I said, why the wait? And Michael said, well, he's got to get himself motivated enough to go pick up the application, fill it out, tailor his resume for a greater position, wait for an interview, wait for a callback. I figured 2 weeks was generous. But while I got a big giggle out of it, Nate Silver's not going anywhere. Because that's the cool thing about punditry, professional political punditry. You don't have to ever be right. It's like being a weatherman. You can get things right maybe half the time and you get to keep your job. The only thing you have to not do is what David Letterman did when he was a weatherman and say, there is hail coming down the size of canned hams. Because they will fire your ass for that. They fired him. But pundits, no. Nate Silver will be back. And, you know, we relied on him and we relied on a whole bunch of other posts. Who got it right? Nobody got it right.
No, that's not true. Farthen, that professor from some nondescript college.
Oh, well, okay, yeah.
He's the only one who got it right. He kept saying, yeah. And I don't remember what his mom markers were. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
I think his name starts with an F. I don't know. It might start with that, but you know who I mean. Folks can Google that. Yeah, he did get it right, but I don't know what he saw. People are just desperate. That's the whole thing. It was about the perceived outsider this time. And this is what happens. And wait a minute. Speaking of O'Brien, did he win?
No.
Damn. Well.
No, it was an across the board slaughter in West Virginia.
That's terrible.
The Muslim hand sign guy is going back to the legislature.
Oh, please. Are you fucking serious?
Quite. I don't joke about shit like that.
That is pathetic. See, that's what I'm talking about. All right. See, that segues into my... This is exactly what I was about to say. See, this is what we get. And we're almost at the same age. I'm a little bit younger than you. When they started to take nice things out of schools, such as gym, art...
Music, theater, speech, debate... debate had to go early.
Oh, debate. You had to go there. You had to go there. You had to say that. See, these people wouldn't have a chance. You wouldn't even be allowed back in the room. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Debate. Like, we call these things debates. It's not a debate. There's a time clock. You got to stay on topic. Come on. So this is what we get. This is where we are now. People are just, I hate to use that phrase again, but we're just, you know, folks are just dumbed down. And when they see the flag and the national, and this USA shit is about to make me vomit. If I hear that shit one more time, I'm going to vomit. I mean, how much more Nazi can you get?
You know what I'm going to do on Inauguration Day, Todd?
What?
I'm gonna do a Twilight Zone marathon. I'm just gonna watch Twilight Zone. I'm damn sure not gonna watch The Post defile a Bible with his tiny orange hand. Hey, what do you want to bet John Roberts doesn't fuck up the oath this time?
You know what?
Because he's not going to be all afraid. He's not going to be all afraid that the black guy across from him is going to mug him.
That shit pissed me off. I mean, I could see, you know the glinty eye. You know that glinty eye we talked about, y'all.
Yeah. Okay.
It was very.
And while we're at it, I just feel a need to put this out there for the little Trumpansies. Maybe they can get a message to melanoma. It's usually really cold in Washington, D.C. for the inauguration, so melanoma might want to make sure and wear clothes.
There you go. Stick it to her. Everybody else did when she was an escort.
Ooh! But, you know, For some reason or another, I woke up this morning and I saw over on Joy's Facebook page the full standing nude in sort of sepia tones of melanoma. And I'm not, you know, I'm no goddamn Puritan. I'm not. I don't get the fantods looking at somebody's naked body.
Who doesn't like to look at naked women? Let's be real. Come on.
Or naked men. I mean, let's be inclusive here.
Right. Well, right. Exactly.
But that photo of her, the way the photographer arranged the shadows makes it look like she's either got a tail or a bowel control problem.
Oh no, she's got one of those. Are you serious?
No, there's this sort of curvy geometric shadow coming out of her ass. I was overtaken by the spirit. I had to run over to YouTube and cue up Jay Giles Band Centerfold.
Wow.
Our first, well, and if I get around to it, I'll sit and write. You know, I was, you know, the Trump used, you can't always get what you want. I beat him to the punch because you might recall I wrote a lyric that said, you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get Hillary.
Mm.
I don't know. I'm thinking there's a parody lyric out there if anybody wants to work on it. My blood runs cold. My memories have just been sold. The First Lady is a centerfold. First Lady is a centerfold.
Who? Jay Giles, yes. Oh, man. I think you're on to something. Somebody will pick that up. Somebody's going to pick that up. So what we have to do now is I think the most disturbing thing to me, it's not even the fascist guy. It's not even Post himself. I'm getting disturbed by this asshole. Giuliani is a disturbing piece of shit.
Well, what? Okay, let's go ahead and violate the rule. It's not like Himmler was an okay guy, or that Goebbels was, or you get the idea, Goering, perhaps.
He does not need to be anywhere near the White House. He is vindictive, racist, disgusting. He take all the worst attributes a human being can have, and he's all of them wrapped up in one little ball.
Mm-hmm. Let me throw another thing out there real quick, Todd. Just to be literary for a moment. Did you catch the concession speech?
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch the Tim Kaine intro? Man, he's going to be a real fireball we can count on in the Senate to oppose the Republican thugs, isn't he? Not. But you caught the speech. Did you catch the quote that Tim Kaine used?
Which one?
Well, he was talking about how, you know, they lost and shit. And and then he included a literary quote.
He put me to sleep, but go ahead, because he's so damn boring.
Okay, so in his speech, he said, Hillary and I know well the wisdom and the words of William Faulkner. He said, they killed us, but they ain't whooped us yet.
Okay.
William Faulkner.
See, and I remember the last time you brought it. I said, well, I think he is conflicted. And I remember I said that. And the reason I said that is because he's the son of the South, but he knew in his heart.
Well, I mean, look, William Faulkner is brilliant literature. There's no getting around it, okay? If you would prefer to have your James Joyce with cornbread instead of whiskey, then you just go over and you read Faulkner. And Faulkner has a lot of magnificent observations on the human condition.
But again, the same campaign that let her say, I was the senator for Wall Street. I was the senator for Wall Street.
And then took a pause like it was supposed to be a fucking applause line. Well, whoever it is, you got a Faulkner quote, Tim? That's beautiful, man.
But wait. DeSantis is a businessman.
Wait.
But he's a businessman.
Wait, here's where it gets good.
Oh.
They killed us, but they ain't whooped us yet. These words emerge from a man named Wash. Wash is a Confederate veteran back from losing the war. And that quote, and the minute he said it, I went, I know where that comes from.
Oh.
And you can find it in Absalom, Absalom.
Oh, right.
And Wash uses it's a lost cause quote.
Yeah, because if you're
and
killed,
it's kind of stupid too. They killed us, but they ain't whooped us yet.
That's oxymoronic in a way, but it's like the movement.
I think if
dead.
You take the oxy off of it, you've got the right word. Because Wash is not a smart fella, and he goes on later in the story to murder. Mars Sutphen. So, Tim Kaine described Hillary using a quote from a fictional Confederate veteran who turns out to be a murderer.
Hmm.
I mean, damn, right?
Yeah, that's a lot. Yes. Yeah. Well,
and see, but see, that's of a piece too. Do you remember when Hillary talked about the dark days of Reconstruction?
Yes. Oh,
when she condemned the attempt to offer the full benefits of civic participation to freed slaves, and said those were dark days. And folks don't understand why there might have been a little bit of an African-American enthusiasm gap for her, you know, once they got past the primaries, when all the old boomer African-Americans ran out to vote for Hillary.
Off the
reservation.
Look, Reconstruction is a touchy fucking issue. Let me tell you, living in the South, I'm telling you, this is the unreconstructed. Most of America is unreconstructed. That's the problem.
Sure it is. I mean, it wasn't an issue for me growing up. I was simply taught that Reconstruction was evil. When the Yankees came down and tried to make us be somebody what we wasn't. And tried to force their wicked, corrupt government with their puppet Negroes onto decent people.
See,
you think I'm kidding?
No, I understand. No, of course you're not kidding. That's my point, is that it never lasted long enough. You know, when Andrew got back, Andrew became president, you know, he was like, oh, that's enough of that. And it was not long enough. It probably had to last 50 years.
Well, there had to be a subsequent insurrection to make it stop. And they happened. One of those uprisings was in New Orleans. But Todd, we got to get out of here, my friend. I love our conversations, and now that you know how to use Skype, I hope you'll join in on the front porch too.
All right, thanks, Bob, and we have to keep our heads up.
You do, and I do, and we will.
All right, man.
All right, bye now. All right, let's. I don't know who this is. Calling over here on the stress line. Got a couple of minutes left. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello. You're on the air. Okay, going once, going twice. And gone. Yeah, it's just as well. There's only a few minutes left in the program. As Carol points out, Howard Dean just announced he's running for DNC chair. Fuck you, Dr. Dean. No. And that's where I'm, yeah, that's where I am too. No retreads. You know, growing up, my father would never put retreads or recaps on his car. If he had to save for him, he'd put new tires on. He said, retreads never last. Retreads aren't safe. No retreads. Keith Ellison, sure. Keith and Raul, sure. Van Jones, I could live with that. He's shown himself to be a pretty fiery individual. I think he would certainly be up to the task of going toe-to-toe with Rent's penis. Yeah? As Carol points out, when the Nazis conquered Europe, I don't think anyone said, well, we lost fair and square, so we really owe it to Hitler to give him a chance. 8:56 Damn it, Gerald! But really, no retreads. If you've had your shot, great. It's time to get out of the way. It's kind of like this program. For the most part, you know, if you call the program, you get your say, you say your say, you hang up, you're done. You don't get to call four times during the program. Because it's kind of not respectful to the other people who want to get through. No Howard Dean. Nobody who had anything to do with the outgoing, and I don't mean that in a good way, with the outgoing DNC administration. And frankly, Debbie Wasserman Schultz should be on a list of people that aren't, there should be a restraining order against her. In the chat room, Steve from Georgia Stan. Stop telling us how to tell time, Bob. Yeah. So the conversation continues. Eventually, it will settle down and normalize, I think. Bernie has issued a conciliatory statement to Post. To the degree that Mr. Trump is serious about pursuing policies that improve the lives of working families in this country, I and other progressives are prepared to work with him. To the degree that he pursues racist, sexist, xenophobic, and anti-environment policies, we will vigorously oppose him. Elizabeth Warren said, President-elect Trump promised to rebuild our economy for working people, and I offer to put aside our differences and work with him on that task. Both of you, you have done all that could possibly have been asked for you in this circumstance. You need say no more. And frankly, they're talking about getting rid of the filibuster in the Senate. Surprise, surprise. And once again, if they don't, the people with all the guns will be very fucking angry. Just saying. Oh, Gerald just forfeited his Hitler pool, winning to the horn. So that means we raised 10 more bucks this evening. Thank you very kindly. Point of order coming from Scott and Punky. Tim Kaine isn't a son of the South. He was born in St. Paul, Minnesota. His family moved to the Kansas City suburb of Overland Park, Kansas, where he lived until he left for college. I agree, but he considers himself a member. He considers himself a son of the Old Dominion now. Mm-hmm. Oh, newsflash. Leonard Cohen
has died. Wow. That's sad. Thanks, Jacob, for letting me know. We will begin the program tomorrow, thanks to Mike in Cascadia, with a $100 challenge on the table tomorrow, opening the program. Mike in Cascadia says, keep the revolution lit. Thanks, Bob. Your words really matter. Well, y'all's do, too. It is the conversation that is helping keep me and, I think, us sane right now. Got to get out of here. Malloy time over over at MikeMalloy.com. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you very kindly, Shorty, for the Have a Show on Me. And thanks to everybody who jumped in support of Shorty. Thank you. Thank you so very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.